Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently. Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have The Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get The Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Okay, let's see what it looks like when we flip the score. Dan, once again, one possession game. Bears could have won this game. Not sure that they'll play some more beatable opponents, but the Giants certainly were that. If you flip the score, what are the concerns that would still be evident?
Well, the concerns, right? Like, those are the big things that would still have us up in arms about this passing attack and the run defense. I think the things that we'd be really diving in on had the Bears won this game and got the 3-1, we'd be talking about the surprise story of the NFC North, right? The 3-1 Chicago Bears. And we'd be talking about how Eddie Jackson has experienced a rebirth, right? To lead the 3-1 Chicago Bears. Three interceptions in four games after the drought that he was on coming into the year. He's obviously playing the ball really well. He makes an amazing interception late in the game to get possession back for the Bears. It was interesting that both Justin Fields on Sunday evening and Darnell Mooney on Monday sort of said that maybe Eddie shouldn't have caught that ball. I think they may have been mistaken on what the situation was. Like, I think they may have thought it was fourth down there, because that play came after a third down conversion. And I remember in the moment being slightly confused because the scoreboard at MetLife Stadium hadn't updated, right? And I think maybe they thought it was fourth down, but you don't tell a safety to drop an interception on first down. Because it's going to pin you inside the five. I mean, what are you talking about there, right?
As somebody who padded his college statistical career by catching glorified punts for 4 years at Ball State, I can say that there's no way in hell Eddie Jackson is dropping that ball.
He is first down.
Plus, it's possession. And you know what? When you're chasing it, all you're thinking about is gaining possession so the receiver doesn't get it as well. I understand what maybe Mooney was implying and Justin Fields certainly after the game, because, I mean, okay, they flipped the field. Tyrod Taylor's got a cannon. He went from the 35 to the 4. That's flipping the field. So that's not really a bad play for the Giants, but it's a gimme for Eddie Jackson. There's no doubt that if this game had gone another way, if the Bears had come out of it, and maybe even now with the loss, but Eddie Jackson, because of his pedigree, can legitimately say he's playing as well as any safety in the NFL right now, because he's got the interceptions to back it up. He's an improved tackler, and he's a team leader.
David, thanks for bringing up the 35 to the 4 bit of this, because in live action, I said to my press box mates on both sides of me, I said, oh my God, because it wasn't just the 35. Tyrod Taylor's like 7 yards deep behind the line of scrimmage, and he throws that ball to the 4 yard line. I mean, it was one of the more impressive deep balls I've ever seen thrown, just in sheer length, right? It was just a cannon throw, and then Eddie got under there. And so that was a little footnote on that play, that like I sat up in my chair and said, oh my God, like that looked like a video game where you just drop back and throw it the entire length of the field trying to get a touchdown on Super Tecmo Bowl.
Made me think that guy won every punt, pass, and kick competition as a 12-year-old because he can throw it a country mile. All right, so I want to ask about this. So when we talk about flipping the score, would you feel differently about the calculated risk or the lack of the risk involved, the risk-averse decision-making that Matt Eberflus showed in not going for it on 4th-and-2 late in the game for the punt and pin that he celebrated and called a great decision and doubled down on that, as well as maybe a couple other situations where, boy, are the Bears playing it safe? Could that have been viewed in a different context had they won?
I'm on the fence on the punt and pin decision because we don't want to get skewed by outcome bias here and say, oh, just because the Bears, who hadn't stopped the run all day, stopped the run and forced a punt, it was a brilliant decision. At the same time, I think that they realized that the Giants had Daniel Jones, who could barely stand up behind center, right? And that, that you can do some things differently strategically to make sure you just kind of load up and stop the run there. And so that factors into the decision a little bit. And I think that Matt just had a gut feeling on, hey, let's trust the defense here. Let's get him to make a play. Look, we've all seen Bears punt returners drafted to be special in those moments, right? And return a kick and change a game and potentially lead you to a win. I'm sure you can remember one very specific example, right? That happened, and Velus Jones missed his opportunity on Sunday afternoon, right? And he catches that ball. At the very least, you get a better possession at the end of the game to give it a try, right? To give Justin Fields one last try to try to lead you to a game tying possession. Matt's going to have many more decisions over the next 14 weeks that will allow us to talk about kind of the conservative versus when you go aggressive, and we'll have a bigger book on him by December and January to say, yeah, he's ultra conservative all the time, or man, he really surprised us by, you know, letting it hang there and giving it a go. This was one example where I could have gone either way, but I understand the arguments on both sides.
Okay, you have to allow my meatball question of the week. So maybe
trust me. I mean, listen, there's right. I get plenty of these on Twitter.
Eddie Jackson returning punts. Consideration? Crazy idea? No chance? What do you think?
I think it's a last resort for all the reasons we talked about. I mean, look, like Tariq Cohen's career ended on a punt return, right? Like on a fair catch in Atlanta, right? Let's just start there with the supporting evidence of the risk reward of doing something like that. And so it's too dangerous for a guy who means so much to your defense. You've got veterans here. Dante Pettis is capable of being a possession punt returner for you and making sure you catch the ball in that situation. Eberflus was asked today, did you consider, given the stakes of that moment, not sending a rookie playing in his first NFL game to catch that punt and send someone with more experience? He said never a consideration. Obviously not Velus's best moment. He's going to have to make up for it at some point. But it would have to take several injuries and a really big whiff of desperation to put Eddie Jackson back there.
All right, let's take a quick look ahead. Okay, Dan, you know what? This is a good opportunity for the Bears. I know they're playing a Vikings team that's loaded with weapons. I know that building is not one that's been kind to the Bears, and I know it's Matt Eberflus's first venture there as a head coach, and all the limitations that we just spent this podcast expounding on and maybe exaggerating a little or certainly exposing. But the Vikings are going to be coming back from London. The Vikings are coming off an emotional victory. They double-doinked their way to victory. Saints. Any shot that the Bears will be catching the Vikings at the right time?
Listen, I remember making my return from London in 2019 and being just cashed for a week and being so happy that there was an open date on the back end of that. And so, yeah, there's certainly a chance that the Bears catch the Vikings at the right time, and that the preparation and the focus and practice for the next 3 or 4 days isn't as sharp as it might have been had they been on the mainland. Like, this is a real thing, you know, for people's bodies and people's minds. And so we'll see what happens. Look, the Vikings are loaded offensively, and they're going to challenge you in a lot of different ways. And you're going to have to account for Justin Jefferson, and you're going to have to account for Dalvin Cook, and you're going to have to account for Adam Thielen, and you're going to have to make life difficult on Kirk Cousins, and we'll see what the Bears can do. Interesting matchup, right? I mean, it's a Vikings team that's been living a charmed life so far, and that kick to end that game Sunday at Tottenham Hotspur Stadium was crazy, because both of those doinks, right? Like, we never thought we'd see another double doink with the game on the line like that again, but both of them seem to be on the inside of the crossbar and then on the inside or the inside of the upright and then the inside of the crossbar. I saw no way that kick didn't go over, and then it fell in the front of the end zone, and you say, wow, what a break. And certainly I went back and revisited my coverage from January of 2019 and the most infamous double doink that ever existed. But this one certainly was close in terms of its entertainment value.
Somewhere Cody Parkey shuddered.
You know,
he was watching that like, oh my gosh, and a big flashback. All right. Anything else going on with the Bears this week of substance? Do you think we talked about the injuries and how they will address those? Anything else that you expect to come out of this week? David Montgomery, Jalen Johnson, their status.
Yeah. So those two guys and Velus Jones are the three I want to circle on my schedule for this week, because obviously David Montgomery looked pretty good. All things considered, running on the sideline, maybe three-quarter speed before the game Sunday afternoon. So we'll see if he's able to get back into the practice mix and push things a little bit. Jalen Johnson, I think we're certainly eager to see whether he's going to be back up, given that we just mentioned what Justin Jefferson is in this league. And you know, Jalen Johnson doesn't shy away from a challenge. He came into to the league as a rookie and said, I want to cover Davante Adams, right? And so that's a guy who's willing to take tests. And so he's certainly eager for one. The reason I bring up Velus again is because Velus Jones played zero offensive snaps on Sunday in New York, right? And so at some point, given the problems the Bears offense has had in scoring touchdowns and getting explosive plays, you'd have to figure that they're eager to mix him into the offense in some way, shape, or form. He's got to have more than zero snaps in Minnesota, I think.
Emotional week for Armon Watts, the former Viking who joined the Bears and is a big part of a defense that has a big challenge ahead and a lot to prove.